authority on heaven and on earth. Thank you, Lord, that you have conquered the enemy. And that, God, even as we're talking about spiritual warfare and the reality of the war that we're in, the reality of our enemy and the forces that are fighting against us and fighting for our souls and our minds, Jesus, thank you that you have conquered, that you've given us the victory. Father, I pray that you would give me grace to speak your word and to teach the Bible today, God, and that I wouldn't just share my ideas or my thoughts, but that I would share your heart and share your word to us this afternoon, this morning, Jesus, and give me grace to go through all of these points, God, to get the message across, what you have for us to hear. In Jesus' name, amen. So 2 Corinthians chapter 2, verse 10. Anyone whom you forgive, I also forgive. Indeed, what I have forgiven, if I have forgiven anything, has been for your sake in the presence of Christ, so that we would not be outwitted by Satan, for we are not ignorant of his designs. You know, my goal in this message series is not to freak you out and make you go, oh man, the devil's everywhere and there's demons all over the place and we gotta watch out and like we gotta make sure we're staying on the straight and narrow. And I don't wanna freak you out. I don't wanna make you nervous and glorify the enemy, but we have to be smart. We have to understand that there is an enemy. He is powerful and he's been studying humanity for thousands of years and his demons have been studying you your entire life. And so they know how to distract you, how to discourage you, how to tempt you, how to torment you, how to get into your life and keep you from fulfilling the call of God. And so we need to understand that there is an enemy and we need to be smart about it. We need to know the reality of the war that we're in. And with that, we go, okay, now what does the Bible say about this? And then after we understand that there's a reality of, we have a very real enemy, then we can look at who's fighting for us. Who's inside of us and the strength and the power of God that's giving us the victory. But we gotta understand that there's an enemy and we start there. And so last week, as Brian said, I pounded home one point that we're in a war. And some of you understood that. I know, I don't like raising my hand or shouting out things at church either. I'm like, I don't know, they're gonna look at me. And so I'll believe that you all got that point. If you didn't, it's all right. You can go on YouTube and you can re-get the point again and then you can also here when I almost said that demons are farting against us instead of fighting. Yeah. Other awkward moments brought to you by Jake Simpson. So that's the main point I wanted to pound home last week, is that we're in a war. The whole Christian life is based on warfare. That we have to get that in our minds. And if we want to see victory, we have to fight. Even the Bible is so clear about this that over and over again, we see different titles of God are like, as a man of war, a God mighty in battle, over and over again, it's this concept of there is a war around us. And so that's what I was trying to pound home last week. I don't want to go too much into that this week, but now I want to try to cover seven simple things that you need to know. Just go real quick through this stuff, or quickish. Thing number one, simple thing number one. Actually, you heard this last week, we are in a war. I'm not going to spend a lot of time here, but I do want to get it in the message here. We're in a war, guys. I read this from A.W. Tozer last week. I want to read it again because it's so good. 1957, he wrote, "In the early days when Christianity exercised a dominant influence over American thinking, men conceived the world to be a battleground. Our fathers believed in sin and the devil and hell as constituting one force, and they believed in God and righteousness and heaven as the other. By their very nature, these forces were opposed to each other forever in deep, grave, irreconcilable hostility. Man, our fathers held, had to choose sides. He could not be neutral. For him, it must be life or death, heaven or hell. And if he chooses to come out on God's side, he could expect open war with God's enemies." Oop, my notes got tiny. All right, where are you going? "The fight would be real and deadly and would last as long as life continued here below. Men looked forward to heaven as a return from the wars, a laying down of the sword to enjoy in peace the home prepared for them. How different today! The fact remains the same, but the interpretation has changed completely. Men think of the world not as a battleground, but as a playground. We are not here to fight, we are here to frolic. We are not in a foreign land, we are at home. We are not getting ready to live, we are already living. And the best we can do is to rid ourselves of our inhibitions and our frustrations and live this life to the full." We gotta get it in our minds that we're in a war, and our life is not meant just to enjoy life, do what we can, live life to the full, have a good time, and then one day we're going to die. No, we're in the middle of a war. We are soldiers in the kingdom of God, and we're here to bring the light of God, to bring the love of God, to the planet, and there's an enemy that's fighting against us. He wants to ruin your mind, ruin your marriage, ruin your work. He wants to steal, kill, and destroy. We got to get in our minds. We're in a war. And not everything that happens is because it's God's will. Because we're in a war, because there's an enemy, there's things that happen that God didn't want to happen. We see that in Daniel 10. I'm not going to go there, but it says that Daniel, he's praying for revelation from God. And as he's praying, he has to pray 21 days, and then finally the angel Gabriel shows up. And the angel Gabriel explains, look, the reason that your prayer was answered right away, but the reason that I couldn't come was because I started to come, but I was met by satanic forces, that the prince of Persia stood against me. And so the answer was yes right away, but I couldn't arrive. I had to fight these forces, and I had to call for Michael, the angel, Archangel Michael, to come as well. And the two of us fought against the prince of Persia, and finally we beat these demonic forces. That's why we're here today. So there's things that happen that are not just, oh, that's the way that God wanted it. No, it happens because we're in a war. So you pray and you pray, and maybe the answer doesn't come right away. There's forces fighting against you. Or you live your life, you're following God, you're doing the best you can to seek and to serve God, but something bad happens. We hit a deer this week. On our way, we were here praying, and I haven't hit a deer since 2004. I haven't hit a deer, and I've driven like all over the place, night and day, haven't hit a deer. I've had some close calls, but we're here praying, and we leave prayer, and there's a deer that comes across on the road. I'm like, okay, slow down. And then, boom, there's another one that came right after that. I was like, where the heck did that come from? You know, well, now it's not that, I don't think the devil went down and commissioned the deer and said, hey, take Jake out. But after that happened, I'm frustrated. I'm like, oh, that sucks. I'm like, what the heck, God, what's going on? Well, we have an enemy. He wants to frustrate you. He wants to break your stuff. He wants to torment you. He wants to make you afraid. He wants to ruin your life. And so if he can get at you by stirring up a deer to go bang against your car, he's going to do that. If he can get at you by causing your neighbor to get angry because you don't mow your lawn as much as you should, he'll do that. If he can get at you through your boss, just kind of being hard on you, he's going to do that. Any way he can get to you, he's going to try to get to you. We're in a war. Simple thing number two, we can't get out of this war. Matthew Henry, in his commentary in Ephesians 6, he says, the Christian armor is made to be worn, and there is no putting off our armor till we have done our warfare and finished our course. You can't take off your armor. You're in a war. There's no way getting out of it. Ecclesiastes 8:8, no man has power to retain the spirit or power over the day of death. There is no discharge from war, nor will wickedness deliver those who are given to it. There is no discharge from war. You're in a war, you can't get out of it. Maybe you're hearing all this talk of that there's an enemy, and there's demons, or there's demonic forces that want to take you out, and they want to steal, kill, and destroy, and you're thinking, I don't like this. I'm just going to quit. I'm going to go on vacation. I'm going to the Bahamas, and I'm going to just relax over in the Bahamas where there's not going to be war. The devil's not going to harass me. I'm just going to take the time off. Guess what? You go to the Bahamas, there's still war. You go to wherever you want to try to escape to, the enemy is still there. You're still going to get tempted. There's still a war for your soul. We went to Colorado years ago, and this was after pot was legalized. So we get into Denver, got to our hotel, we get out of the car, and we're like, oh yeah, pot was legalized. We could smell it everywhere. And then it happened to be April 20th that we were there, 420. So not really the best time to go to Denver after pot's legalized. Our hotel was filled with pot smokers. And we're like, oh, this sucks. You know, we're here. We wanted to take a vacation with the family, just enjoy nature, enjoy God. We weren't looking forward to having a bunch of pot smokers all around us all the time. So it was a lot of warfare. We woke up in the morning and we didn't know, are there going to be munchies at the gas station? It was a lot of warfare, so we had to pray for that. There was no donuts there, nothing salty, no, nothing sweet. You're in a war and you can't get out of it. There's basically, you know, actually, honestly, I guess there are two ways out of this war. One is Jesus comes back. Great, war's over. We don't have to fight anymore. Everything's awesome. We're loving it. We're having a great time hanging out with God. Satan and demons and everything evil is destroyed forever. And great. That's one way out. Another way out is death. Maybe great for you. The rest of us might miss you, you know, if you're in heaven, you're having a good time, but we might be a little sad. So not really a great option there. You can't even surrender. You can't just tell the devil, you know what, take my life, I'll just serve you. I'll go back to living in sin. I'll go back to doing whatever you want because I'm just tired of the warfare. I'm tired of the stress. I'm tired of getting up early. I'm tired of going to church. I'm tired of tithing. I'm tired of trying to like resist sin. I'm just going to surrender to you, devil. You're still in the war. Because even those who serve the enemy, guess what? He still torments them. When we were in Romania, we ministered to a number of heroin addicts. Heroin addicts are so obsessed with this, so addicted to this drug, that they're willing to sell all of their stuff in order to buy drugs. They're willing to give up their money that they would use for food so that they could live. They give that up to buy drugs. Because even though they've surrendered to the enemy and said, okay, devil, come and run my life, do whatever you want, I'll serve you, he still torments them. So they're all sick, their teeth are falling out, they're emaciated, and a number of them died because he doesn't care. You surrender to him, it just means that you've given up, that you've allowed him to come and torment you more. He doesn't stop fighting. You just stop fighting him, stop resisting him, and you've given up God's protection over your life. We are in a war, and we can't get out of it. King David tried to escape the war, 2 Samuel chapter 11. In the spring of the year, the time when kings go out to battle, David sent Joab and his servants with him and all Israel, and they ravaged the Ammonites and besieged Rabbah, but David remained at Jerusalem. Did you catch that? It's the spring. It's the time when the kings go to battle. There is a war raging. But David wants to take a break. He's tired of fighting. He doesn't want to go to war. So he says, you know what? I'm going to stay in Jerusalem, and how about you guys go out and you fight the battle for me? Because I'm tired, and I'm sick of this, and I've been fighting my whole life. I just want to relax. And so he stays behind in Jerusalem. Everybody else goes to fight. And then verse 2. It happened late one afternoon when David arose from his couch. So he's just hanging out in Jerusalem, sleeping late. Late in the afternoon, he's like, you know what? Maybe it's time to get up. Goes, hangs out on the couch, eating bonbons, watching soap operas. And then it says that he wanders over. He was walking on the roof of the king's house, and that he saw from the roof a woman bathing. And the woman was very beautiful. And we know the rest of the story from there. So he's hanging on the roof. He sees Bathsheba. He's like, oh, hey, she looks pretty good. And so he sends his servants to go grab her. He sleeps with her. She gets pregnant. He tries to cover it up. He can't cover it up. So then he's got to kill her husband. And then he gets rebuked for that. Nathan the prophet comes and rebukes him for good reason. And then the baby ends up dying. And everything goes to pot because David decided, I don't want to fight. I'm tired of the war. I want to get out of the war. I'll take a break. But the war didn't end. It just shifted. He's still in the war. You know, you could just decide, hey, I'm tired of fighting. I'm tired of trying to do this. I'm tired of trying to live the Christian life, tired of trying to press in and read my Bible and pray and serve God. I'm just going snowmobiling for a week up north, and I'm going to just forget about it. You can't escape this war. You can maybe escape Oconomowoc. You can escape the Lake Country. You can escape your job and the hassles there, but you're still going to be in a spiritual war. You can think of it this way, that we're citizens of the kingdom of heaven, right? And so through Jesus, we're citizens of the kingdom of heaven, and the kingdom of heaven has declared war on the kingdom of Satan. And so we are, as citizens of the kingdom of heaven, automatically engaged in that war as well. Derek Prince, a British Bible teacher, he said, in 1939, I was a British citizen resident in Britain. On the 3rd of September, the British government officially declared war on Nazi Germany. Because my government had legally declared war, I was automatically involved. So it didn't matter whether he had a personal thing against the Nazis or not. It didn't matter what his opinion of the war was. Because his government had declared war on Nazi Germany, boom, he's part of the war. That's what happened in the kingdom of God. God declared war on Satan's kingdom. He declared war on the enemy. And so us, as residents in the kingdom of heaven, citizens in the kingdom of heaven, we automatically are in that war. Okay, simple thing number 3. Our war is not a physical war, but a spiritual war. Everybody is super quiet today. I got to drink more. That's why. Then at least I get All right, Ephesians 6:12. For we do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the authorities, against the cosmic powers of this present darkness, against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly places. Our war, it's not a physical war, it's a spiritual war. Your calling is not to go and destroy the Democrats. Go fight Vladimir Putin. Get rid of all the terrorists. F- fight the abortionists. No, that's not your war. Our war is a spiritual war. It's not a physical war. 2 Corinthians 10:3. For though we walk in the flesh, we are not waging war according to the flesh. For the weapons of our warfare are not of the flesh, but have divine power to destroy strongholds. Now remember, man, we're three parts. We're body, soul, and spirit. Body, that's easy to figure out. What's the body? Okay, everybody's got their body. We all know what that is. What's the soul? That's your mind, your will, your emotions, your internal life. Then there's the spirit. That's the part of you that's from God, your conscience, the thing that brings life to you. That's your spirit. And so even though we have a physical body and we're living in this physical world, our war is not about, it's not about the physical world with our physical body. Sometimes it's a spiritual war with spiritual weapons. And yes, a spiritual war can affect the physical world and it'll affect clearly our soul, and it'll have an effect on our body at times. But it's primarily a spiritual thing. It's a spiritual war. It's not that, you know, we saw take out our swords and start like trying to hack up demons around. No, it's not. That's not it. It's a spiritual war. And so it's important to remember the weapons that we use, the type of war that we're in determines the type of weapons that we'll use. I'll give you an example. In high school, I was in a food fight. It wasn't, it's not as cool as you think. You kids that hear that, you're like, oh, that sounds fun. I wish I could have a food fight. Well, you're all homeschooled, so you can get your butts whipped if you do that. It's really not that fun. Has anybody been in a food fight here? Raise your hand if you've been in a food fight. Yeah. It's really not that fun, right? You get messy. It's dirty. It's kind of gross, kind of nasty. It's not like the movies. It's not really that fun. So, but in high school, we had a food fight once. I didn't start it. We were in our lunchroom, and somebody just started chucking stuff at the food fight. And so everybody's throwing stuff. I didn't have very much good stuff to throw. You know, some guys were throwing those little chocolate milk containers, you know? Oh, those are awesome. I had one of those, so some guys were throwing those, and it was kind of fun to see the explosion and all that, but I had one of those, but I was not going to throw my chocolate milk. That's for drinking, man. So don't throw chocolate milk. I brought a lunch from home, so I didn't have, some guys had hot dogs they were throwing, or like Sloppy Joes, that was also cool, mashed potatoes. I didn't have that. I had chips, that's all I could throw, and so I'm throwing chips, and not that effective, really, in a food fight. Now, I'll tell you, when I was in Ukraine, though, and there's a war going on there, that's a different kind of war, and they had a different kind of weapons. If you go to Ukraine, and you're throwing chips and hot dogs and mashed potatoes, not really that effective. It's not going to work so well. The Russians with their AKs are like, what? You silly American, go home. Maybe you could throw like Taco Bell or a Mickey D's burger. That's chemical warfare. Yeah. Yeah. Or some of the Oscar Mayer hot dogs, you know, if you don't get the Hebrew National. I don't know. Certain kind of foods might work. We are in a spiritual war. We have to use spiritual weapons. You know, there's a temptation to use physical weapons. And I don't just mean, you know, like to use our bodies and all that and start like, I don't think anybody here is tempted to, you know, whip out a sword and start hacking up things. I hope. I hope you figured that out by now. We're not into that. But there's a temptation to use the weapons of our flesh to get angry. We see like what the liberals are doing, or we see like homosexuality on the rise, or the transgender movement, or we see abortion and we're like, oh, I hate that, or terrorism or something. We're like, oh man. We start just getting angry. We name call, or we intimidate, dominate, we manipulate. We use these fleshly weapons really to try to win. But our war is a spiritual war. And so we have to use spiritual weapons when we're fighting this. So what's that? It's like using love, using forgiveness, using mercy, fasting and prayer, casting out demons, breaking curses, which we'll get into that stuff as we go along. But it's a spiritual war that requires spiritual weapons, not physical weapons. Yeah. When we were in Romania, I learned this lesson one time when we had told this story before, but we had a neighbor that was just mad at us. Everything that went on in the apartment complex, he blamed it on us because we were the foreigners and we had a lot of kids, and so he was just mad at us. And so there'd be a water problem. The water had like extra soot in it, and he came banging on our door. It's your fault you put this in. Like, we didn't do anything. What are you talking about? there'd be a little bit of noise in the apartment, in the complex. And he immediately came to our house, is yelling at us, saying, well, it's because of all your kids. My kids are quiet. You know my kids are quiet. You all know how they are. They read books. That's the loudest they get, except for Cosette and Paul. They're a little louder. But they weren't around back then. And so he would blame us for every problem. And we had two different ways that we approached this war. The first time we approached it the right way, we recognized that it was a spiritual war. The second time we approached it the wrong way, and saw it more as a physical war, and got responded with physical weapons. So the first time, you know, this guy's just getting mad at us all the time, and Jesse and I are like, "What the heck is going on?" We're like, "This, it's a spiritual war. There's demons behind this guy that are just making him mad at us." And so we started praying and praying, and we felt like God say, "Bake him some cookies. Give him the cookies and tell him you love him. Tell him you're praying for him. Write something nice down, you know, a nice message for him. And just show him love." We're like, "All right, we're going to do that." So we made some cookies. We delivered to him with a nice message to him. And we didn't speak Romanian very well. So I think, I don't know. I think we might have been able to say, like, "We love you," something like that. Very deep stuff. But we gave him these cookies. And then suddenly, boom, it broke this hardness on him. He became our friend. He loved us. He would talk about us to other neighbors, how great we were and all that. It was like we won this spiritual war for like 6 months. And then it started again. I was in my office preparing a message, had my headphones on, so I didn't really hear anything. But then Jessie comes into the door, into the room, and she's just bawling, you know. She goes, "I'm like, what's wrong?" And she's like, "That neighbor came back again, and he started yelling at me, and he started saying this and that, and I don't even know what I can't understand everything he's saying, but I don't know what's going on." And like, okay, when I see my wife crying, I'm like, okay, I'm ready to take out whoever did that. I get a little bit upset, you know, and so then I thought, I approached it different. I went up, spiritual war, no, this is a physical war now. And I went, banged on his door, and I started in my bad Romanian, just started saying, "Never! No! Wife, cry! Never! No!" I was so mad, and I think everybody in the apartment complex could hear me, and this guy just like freaked out, and then his wife freaked out. She starts coming at me with this big stick, like a, I don't know, like a club kind of thing, and like trying to hit me with it, and I just grabbed it, threw it on the ground, and then walked away, and I was just mad. And we won. He left us alone after that, because he thought I was insane and was going to beat him up. But did we really win? No, we didn't really win, because he knew we were Christians. I shared the love of God with him. We wrote the gospel in this message to him with the cookies. And he knew we were Christians. He knew we were there to share the love of Jesus. And here I am just trying to assault him, essentially. And so we can't get confused. There is a real enemy, but it's not people. It's not your angry boss. It's not your crazy neighbor. It's not your wife. It's not your kids. It's the one behind them. It's Satan and his demons. And it's a spiritual war we're fighting, so we gotta use spiritual weapons. We can't revert to fleshly weapons, just getting angry, name-calling, harassing people, trying to dominate or manipulate them. No, we have to use spiritual weapons, trust God to fight the battle for us. Simple thing number four. See, I'm cranking through these. Yeah. We're gonna come back. I'm gonna cover more stuff about this in later messages, but I was like, I just wanna get this stuff down real quick. Simple thing number four. Our enemy is Satan and his demons. Kind of covered that already, but let's do more. 1 Peter 5:8. Be sober-minded. Be watchful. Your adversary, the devil, prowls around you like a roaring lion, seeking someone to devour. Your enemy is not your children, your wife, your boss, your neighbor. It's not Muslims. It's not terrorists. It's not Democrats, liberals, whatever. It's not any person. It's Satan and his demons. I love what John Wimber said. The enemy is our only enemy. The enemy is our only enemy. It's not anybody else. It's the enemy. He's your enemy. You know, and on one level, that's really comforting, isn't it? Maybe you're like, no, it's not. But it's kind of comforting. You don't have to fight Muslim terrorists. You don't have to end corruption. You don't have to fix your crabby neighbor. You don't have to solve the world's problems. You don't have to end abortion. It's great, you know, people that get a passion to end abortion and get a passion for Muslims or for whatever. It's great that to be passionate and do something with that. But that's primarily not your battle. Your primary battle is not to fix all of these problems and fight all of these people. Your battle is just against Satan. That's all. But so on one level, that's comforting. All right, cool. that's all we got to focus on. Okay, but on another level, that is a little bit terrifying because, you know, like the verse says, that he's prowling around like a roaring lion, seeking someone to devour. He's been studying us our whole lives. His demons have been studying us our whole lives. He's been studying humanity for generations. He knows how to fight this war. He's smart. He's not foolish. He's not dumb. He's organized and he's strong. And yeah, on your own, without Jesus and without the victory that he brings us, yeah, it's a little bit terrifying. There's that movie series, the Finger of God movie series, and one of the movies is, I think it was Furious Love? Yeah, Furious Love. Showed that to a friend in Romania, and in that movie, it's pretty intense, where you see Christians going into like witchcraft festivals, New Age conventions and stuff, and there's stories, testimonies of Satanists getting set free, but you see like how intense and how powerful the enemy is as well. But I watched the movie and I'm like, oh wow, this is cool. You see like the intensity of the enemy, but then you see, bam, Jesus is stronger. Jesus is victorious over that. I see that and I get encouraged. Well, I showed that to a friend. I gave it to a friend in Romania that I thought was a Christian, but he was kind of, apparently he was not. He was like really like one foot with God, one foot in the world, because I gave him that. I said, oh, this will really encourage you. Well, then later on I asked, well, did you watch that? What did you think? And he goes, that freaked me out because I know the devil's got me. And I don't know what to do. Just surrender to God. That's all you got to do. Well, he did. And now he's been going to our church for the past couple years in Romania. But, you know, if you are not in the right camp, you're not fighting on the right side, you haven't surrendered your life to God. Yeah, Satan is terrifying because you have no way to defend yourself against him. He's too smart, too sneaky, too organized. He can put thoughts in your mind that you don't even realize they're his thoughts. You think that's just how you think, and you do things just because you think that's just what I do. But the reality is, it's him manipulating you. So if you're not submitted to God, yeah, Satan's terrifying. But as soon as you submit to God, you don't have to worry about it. It's just Satan. Matthew Henry, another one from Matthew Henry. I've got a lot from Matthew Henry today. I love his commentary. If you don't have Matthew Henry's commentary, you should get it. It's really cool. So his commentary on Ephesians 6, he says, our combat is not against human enemies, not against our own corrupt nature only. We have to do with an enemy who has a thousand ways of beguiling unstable souls. We have to understand that, yeah, okay, we're in right relationship with Jesus, so we've got nothing to fear, but we don't want to just be like, oh, whatever, the devil, he's no big deal. No, he is actually, he's very smart, he's very strong, and he's very manipulative, and so we got to be smart about what he's doing. And learn how to attack it and learn how to defend ourselves against his tactics. It's to his advantage to convince us that he's no big deal, or even to get us to think that he doesn't exist. In C.S. Lewis's Screwtape Letters, the older demon Screwtape is giving the younger demon Wormwood advice on how to manipulate people and how to get them to do what the demons want them to do. And he says to Wormwood, I do not think you will have much difficulty in keeping the patient in the dark. The fact that devils are predominantly comic figures in the modern imagination will help you. If any faint suspicion of your existence begins to arise in his mind, suggest to him a picture of something in red tights and persuade him that since he cannot believe in that, he therefore cannot believe in you. Something dangerous has happened to the modern Western world. Back in the day, and in most parts of the world, Christians get it, that Satan is real, that he's a real being who's out to destroy you, and we've got to be smart about that and be ready to protect ourselves, be in submission to Jesus so that we win. But in the modern Western world, we think, Satan, I don't know, it was this goofy guy with little horns and he's got his pitchfork. No, I don't believe in that. George Barna did a poll recently where he found that 59% of Americans say that Satan is just a symbol or a concept of evil, not an actual being. That's 59% of Americans. Now he breaks that number further. 75% of Catholics strongly agreed with this statement. Three quarters of Catholics said, yeah, Satan's not real. It's just an idea. It just means evil things. 40% of Bible-believing evangelical Christians said exactly the same. That's scary. 4 in 10 Bible-believing evangelical Christians don't really believe that Satan is real and there's a real battle against them, that it's just an idea of evil. I was there. I was in that camp. Before I really surrendered my life to Jesus, I remember reading the Bible and you see about Satan and all that. And I thought, I don't know. It's just like, that seems so like old-fashioned and kind of weird. And I don't believe all that. And then I came to Cornerstone, and one of the first, I was remembering this, because I'm on this series right now, Spiritual Warfare, and I think, if not the first message, one of the first messages that Michael preached was about spiritual warfare. And I remember he was talking about casting demons out, and most of you know the story of the girl that like bounced on the bed, and I remember him telling this, and I was like, no, that doesn't, and then me and my friends afterwards, we'd walk home to the dorms after church, and we debate on whether this was true or not. I'm like, yeah, Michael told another story about casting demons out. Do you think that was true? And my theory was, no, Michael's just very dramatic. And he's talking about he counseled this woman and helped her through her problems. But no, that can't, I mean, no, people don't have demons. And like, no, that doesn't make any sense. And, oh, no, it's then I started reading the Bible more and like really looking into it. And it's like, oh, no, that's everywhere in the New Testament. And, oh, it's in the Old Testament, too. And, yeah, okay. And then I had demons cast out of myself. And then I'm casting demons out of people. Like, okay, I think my viewpoint shifted. But growing up, I went to church. We went to church at least a couple times a month. So we were real radical, not denominational churchgoers, you know. But I read the Bible. I believed there was a God. But when people would talk about Satan, I was like, no. That can't be true. We got to get our minds right. This really hit home recently for me. This week I was in a meeting with local pastors, evangelical pastors. And as we were meeting, they were debating things where I was like, that shouldn't be a debate. Like they were asking, one guy asked, hey, do you think it's, what's your opinion of us as pastors performing weddings for non-Christians? And everybody there except for me said, oh yeah, that's cool. And I said, no, because if I do a wedding for a non-Christian, they're not basing it on Jesus. And so then what happens? Then the husband's going to hurt his wife. The wife's going to hurt her husband. And then they're going to hurt their kids. And then I'm going to stand before God one day and you'll say, what did you do? I wasn't blessing that. And so I explained this and they all went, I don't know. I don't really get that. Well, and then they asked, well, what do you think about homosexual marriage? Would you ever do a homosexual wedding? I'm like, no. That shouldn't even, no, that's not even in the radar. No, that's wrong. We can't budge. Well, none of them have done homosexual weddings, and they all told me, yeah, there were a couple other guys that were strongly opposed to it, like I was. But there are a few guys that were like, well, I don't know. I think it's in a certain situation. I really think it might be an appropriate way to communicate the gospel, but I wouldn't do it because my denomination wouldn't allow it or because people would perceive it wrong. No, that shouldn't even be in the debate. How could I, there's two guys that are living in sin, how can I sanctify that and call what God is calling sin, how can I make a relationship out of that and say that that's good? No, you can't do it. It's but they were so clueless about it, and then we went on talking about other things, and then one of the guys says, started talking about Daniel, and he's like, well, you know, we really shouldn't be concerned about, something along the lines of we shouldn't be concerned about getting involved doing things that are perceived as sin in order to bless people in the world, because look at what Daniel did. Daniel did witchcraft and occult stuff with all the wise men of Babylon in order to bless Babylon. No, he didn't. Nowhere in the Bible does it say that Daniel did witchcraft or occult stuff, that he just dabbled in a little bit of sorcery because he's like, oh no, I want to kind of fit in. No. Can you imagine? Daniel, when he was told to pray, or when he was told he couldn't pray, he prays with the window open and is cast into the lion's den. No, I can't imagine that Daniel ever would say, yeah, let's just dabble in a little bit of witchcraft because I want to bless these guys a little bit, and so I'm willing to do whatever it takes. No, that's just, so then it hit me. I'm like, well, that's why they don't get it. That's why then they're willing to push the line on marriage and on homosexuality, because already they don't understand that there's a real devil and there's a real war that we're fighting. They've already said it's okay if men of God do witchcraft. So what the heck? This is the war, this is the reality of the world that we're living in right now, where people don't understand the spiritual war that's out there. And we gotta be different. We gotta go back to the scriptures and know, okay, this is the truth. And we gotta pray. I mean, if there's pastors that are thinking this stuff and even like debating things that are like, that should not be debatable, then what are the people in the churches thinking? No wonder our nation is so screwed up. No wonder people don't want to go to churches, and people who do go to churches are not changing. They can go year after year after year, and they're still full of sin. Their marriages are still ruined. They're addicted to drugs. They're addicted to alcohol. They're addicted to porn. They're angry. Their businesses are falling apart because they're not really living for God, because they're not being taught the gospel that really changes your life. George Barna, in response to these statistics that he found, He said, Hollywood has made evil accessible and tame, making Satan and demons less worrisome than the Bible suggests they really are. It's hard for achievement-driven, self-reliant, independent people to believe that their lives can be impacted by unseen forces. You know, it doesn't matter if in our Western world this isn't popular, it's not cool, it's what the Bible says. That there is a real enemy, and he's got forces that he's aligned together to try to destroy your life. And we've got to take that seriously. We can't just go into things blind, pretending everything's going to be okay. That if I do whatever I want, and I just kind of love people, and I act good, and I try to get along with everybody, it's going to be fine. And we just try to get a lot of people together who kind of say things about Jesus, and we kind of live for God, we kind of read the Bible, we kind of act a little bit better. No, there is a real war that's going on, and we have a real enemy. Simple thing number 5, Satan wants to destroy us. Oh, is that all? John 10:10, the thief comes only to steal, kill, and destroy, but I have come that they may have life and have it abundantly. So we have the encouragement that Jesus came to destroy the enemy, that Jesus came to bring us life. But the beginning of the verse is the reality that this is what the devil is all about. He wants to destroy. He wants to kill. He wants to steal. He's the one who wants to make you poor. He wants to ruin your marriage, ruin your mind. He wants to confuse you, get you discouraged, depressed, make you stay up late at night, unable to sleep, hurt your body so you get sicknesses and you can't get better. That's his job, to destroy you. That's what he loves to do. I've done evangelism all over the world, talked with thousands of people, probably shared the gospel with thousands of people. And everywhere I go, when people realize that they're accountable to God for their sins and that they'll be judged for their sins, they're not ready to surrender to God, they'll make the same joke over and over again. They'll say, oh man, that's cool, yeah. Me and my buddies, we're going to rock out with Satan in heaven. It's going to be fun. We're going to party it up, bro. It's like, no, Satan's not cool. He's not your buddy. He's not your friend. He's out to destroy you. He wants to hurt you. As Cosette likes to say, the devil is a weirdo. She says it all the time. I love it. So no matter what, even if you're not a Christian, the devil is out to hurt you. He's out to ruin your life. But as you become a Christian, things just get even more intense, because now it's not just that you're a person and he wants to hurt you. Now you're fighting for his enemy. And so he's going to really try to either take you out or distract you or confuse you or somehow keep you from fulfilling the call of God on your life, make you ineffective. But why? Why does the enemy hate people so much? Why does he hate humanity so much? Well, I thought of 5 different things. Number 1 is that we're made in the image of God. Satan hates God. And if he can't attack God directly, because he can't, because God would just obliterate him. So he can't attack God directly. So he attacks something that bears the image of God. Kind of like, if you can imagine, a guy and a girl are engaged to be married. And maybe the guy, it's a long-distance relationship, and the guy calls her up and says, yeah, you know, I'm just going to call this off. Well, what does the girl do? Take the picture out of her wallet, rips it up, you know. She can't slap him in the face, so she rips the picture. That's kind of like the enemy. That he can't attack God directly. He can't hurt God, because God's God, and he would just finish the devil. So then he attacks the one that bears the image of God. He attacks us. And the image of God, the likeness of God, that's what the enemy wanted. Way back when he rebelled against God, it says that he wanted to be like God. He wanted the likeness of God. But instead of him getting that, he tried to get it, but he failed. And so then God, instead of allowing the enemy, the devil, Lucifer, to have the image of God, he looked at us and he's like, you know what? I'm going to create something else out of dirt, and I'm going to give it my image instead of giving it to you, Lucifer. So we get the thing that the enemy wanted. He's mad at us for that. Number 2, we were created for unique intimacy with God. God didn't just speak and boom, there's people. He actually dug into the dirt, got his hands dirty, and formed us out of the dirt. That's intimate. That's a closeness that we were created to have a closeness to him. And then he got down and he actually breathed his own spirit into us. There's an intimacy that we have with God. And the enemy, he knows that. And he sees, okay, I can't attack God, but I can attack this part of his creation that was made to be close to him, that's dear to his heart, and that's going to hurt God. You think about your kids. If someone can say anything to me and do anything to me, and it's like, whatever, you know, I can deal with that. But if they say something about my kids, or if they hurt my kids, I'm like, oh man, they better get themselves to a Benny Hinn conference and get prayed for, because they're going to need some healing. You don't mess with people's kids. They're ready to fight, you know? And I think God's like that. And the devil knows it. So he hates us because if he hurts us, that hurts our Father. And God's and the devil knows that. So that's why he hates us. Number three, we hold a unique place as the pinnacle of creation. After God created everything, he set humanity over that. And if God, if the enemy wants to smear God, if he wants to make God look bad, he can hit the top of creation, the pinnacle of creation. That's us. It's not zebras or platypuses or anything else. It's us. And so that's why he hates us so much. He doesn't have a problem with zebras or platypuses or any chickens or llama or anything else, as far as I know. But he hates people because we're the pinnacle of creation and he wants to smear God's name. Number four, we have God's authority to rule on the earth. And so there's a practical side of his attacks on us. He knows if he can take us out, then he gets authority on the earth. And he gets, wherever you are in your life, in your sphere of influence, if he gets into your life and starts working through you, messing up your mind, getting you to think his thoughts and to speak his words and to do his actions, then your sphere of influence and authority that you have on the earth, suddenly he gets that authority. And so he wants to attack people because of the authority that we have on the earth. And another part of it is just jealous rage. Satan wanted authority to rule on the earth. That's why he rebelled against God, is he wanted authority to rule over the earth. But instead of him getting it, God gave it to people. And so he's mad. He's jealous of the authority that we have. And number five, I can't really... I have a theory that... I heard a theory recently and thought, oh, that's kind of interesting. And I want to talk about it more on a later message. But number five, we were created... I believe we were created in direct response to the devil's rebellion. I think... that after the devil rebelled, that shortly after the devil rebelled is when God created people. And I think part of the reason God created us was because of the devil's rebellion. And so I think every time that the devil looks at us, he remembers his failure to rebel. He remembers the failed revolution. And so he's ticked when he looks at us because we were created in a direct result of the failure that he had to take over the kingdoms of heaven. So I think that's why the enemy hates us. Because we're made in the image of God, because we have authority to rule on earth, because we're the pinnacle of creation, because we're created for intimacy with God, and because we remind him of his failure to take over heaven. Simple thing number six. We need to get serious about fighting this war. 1 Timothy 6, starting in verse 11. But as for you, O man of God, flee these things. Pursue righteousness, godliness, faith, love, steadfastness, and gentleness. Fight the good fight of the faith. Take hold of the eternal life to which you were called and about which you made the good confession in the presence of many witnesses. Thank you. The word fight, the noun is agon and the verb is agonizomai that he uses here. Elsewhere it's translated conflict, struggle, opposition, contention, strive, earnestly labor. And sometimes it's translated a race or to compete in the Olympic Games. In secular Greek, this word was used in like ancient Greek literature in a general sense about any struggle or fight, but in a particular sense, it was specifically used about the Olympic Games or a similar sport contest like that. And if you read on the Greek Olympic Games and the Greek sports, the Greeks were very serious about their sports, and it was so intense that people would talk about, if you read some of the old literature about it, they'd talk about that guys would just fight with all their hearts and then just collapse. Like some guys would even die in the process of fighting to win. And so when Paul talks about fight the good fight, it's an intense thing. It's in the word agon, agonizomai, these words that he uses there, it's where we get our words agony from, agonize. It's not an easy thing. There is a real fight that we're involved in, and it's going to take some work. Like if you think about Olympic athletes, you know, an Olympic athlete, the amount of work, discipline, and training that goes involved with competing in the Olympics and then winning in the Olympics, the amount of training and work that goes into that is intense. I did some reading up on it this week. In 2018, Forbes did an article where they said that on average, Olympic athletes spent between 4 and 8 years training just to make it into the Olympics. 4 to 8 years just to be able to make it into the Olympics. And they planned out their training schedules years in advance, knowing, okay, by this date, I'm going to have this figured out, and by that date, I'm going to do this. They had to be very organized, very disciplined, and spend years to train. Leading up to the Olympics, their training would get even more intense. Olympic gymnast Simone Biles said that she trained 32 hours every week just to be able to compete. Gabby Douglas, another gymnast, her training regimen was every day from 8 a.m. to noon, then she would take a lunch break, and then she'd train again until dinner, whenever that would happen. Swimmer Michael Phelps trained every day in the pool, 3 to 6 hours, plus separate exercises on land for 4 to 5 days a week. His life was training to get into the Olympics. At the 2012 London Olympics, they did a study and found that athletes said that they practiced as much as 10,000 hours before they got to the Olympics. That's a lot of work. That's not easy. That's hard. And so we got to get serious about it. We got to understand that there is a real war out there. Yes, we win because of Jesus. Yes, we win because we're surrendered to him and he defeated the enemy. But there is a war for our souls and we got to fight it to win. Leonard Ravenhill, who wrote Why Revival Tarries, he has this great quote. No church group that knows spiritual warfare has wiener roasts. He goes on with that, but I like that. I'm like, that's good there. I'll take that one. Any church that gets spiritual warfare, it's like, we're not going to waste our time having hot dog roasts. We're not going to waste our time with, oh, let's do an ugly Christmas sweater party. I mean, not that, okay, is there anything demonic with a wiener roast? Yeah, clearly there is. But we all know. Let's move on. Is there anything necessarily demonic about an ugly Christmas sweater party? No. But, well, some of those Christmas sweaters, darn right, are pretty close to demonic. But if we get spiritual warfare, it's like, no, church is more than that. Our life is more than that. It's not about, hey, let's get people together so we can have some hot dogs and wear some ugly sweaters and have some inflatables and an Easter bunny and just have a good time. No, there's a war going on, and we got to get serious about fighting it. There's more to it than just having a fun time and hanging out. All right, let's close with simple thing number 7. Jesus already won the war. Colossians chapter 2, verse 13. And you who were dead in your trespasses and the uncircumcision of your flesh, God made alive together with him, having forgiven us all our trespasses by canceling the record of debt that stood against us with its legal demands. This he set aside, nailing it to the cross. He disarmed the rulers and authorities and put them to open shame by triumphing over them in him. Jesus defeated the enemy on the cross. He disarmed him. He took his power. He took his authority. When Jesus died and rose again, that obliterated the enemy's power over us. He has no authority over us. And yes, it's sort of like the D-Day invasion. June 6, 1944, right, Brian? June 6, 1944, the Allied troops invaded on D-Day. And historians say, okay, when that happened, that signified that the war is over. Like, it was, I think, 15 months later or somewhere, a year and a bit or something until Japan finally surrendered and the whole war was done. But when D-Day happened, historians say, okay, that just meant it's done. You know, that the invasion was so disastrous to the Germans that it was guaranteed that we had the victory. It would be a matter of months before everything totally was finished up. And so when Jesus died and rose again, he disarmed the enemy. He won the war. He defeated the enemy for us. And now he still does stuff. They're still mopping up operations. We still have to fight. We still have to, he still has some authority in people's lives. And so we still have to fight. We can't just kind of relax and go, yeah, Jesus won. I can just do whatever I want. No, there's still battles that are raging, but Jesus won the war for us. Matthew Henry writes in his commentary, the devil, though he is an enemy to all saints, is a conquered enemy. The captain of our salvation has defeated and disarmed him. We have nothing to do but to pursue the victory. So yes, the enemy is strong. Yes, he's smart. Yes, he's sneaky and he's deceptive and manipulative. And yes, we need to be aware of that and be ready to fight him. But we have this great, awesome hope, not hope, but an awesome assurance, an awesome understanding that Jesus defeated him. That he doesn't have the authority that he had in the past. Jesus has all power and all authority. So wherever we see the enemy reigning or the enemy ruling or whatever he's doing in your life or in someone else's life, you have authority to speak against him and to cast him out. That's what Jesus demonstrated in his life. Everywhere he went, he's healing the sick, he's casting out demons, he's delivering people from the oppression of the enemy. So if Jesus was doing that on earth in a physical body, before he was glorified, how much more power and authority does he have now that he's on heaven? And now it's not limited to one man with a physical body, but now God's Spirit is in all of us, and so wherever we go, we have authority over the enemy. He's a defeated foe.
So yeah, the battle's intense. Yeah, we got to fight. Yeah, we got to wake up and really get serious about it. We can't be blind to what the enemy is doing. But man, it's awesome to know that Jesus already won for us. So winning is not that hard. It's not that difficult. If we just surrender to Jesus and surrender to his power and his authority in us and live in faith to what he actually did for us, then winning is easy. Cosette has gotten really into throwing things lately, like in a good sense, usually. Sometimes it's annoying because I'll try to read a book and she's like, "Daddy, catch!" Like, whoa. But the other day, this was a couple weeks ago, I think, she was in the living room and she had this ball and she was trying to throw it up to touch the ceiling. And Cosette has little arms, she's kind of petite, you know, and so she couldn't throw it very high. And she's like, "Oh," and it would get like kind of bounce on her head and a little bit higher maybe. But she'd look up and go, "Oh, almost, almost, almost." But no, it wasn't anywhere close. Well, she said she's standing in the living room, trying to throw this ball against the ceiling, encouraging herself. Paul walks down. Paul's like watches her for a bit, and he sees the ball fall on the ground. Sees it go up, sees it fall, sees it goes up, sees it fall, and he's like, "I can do better than that." So he walks over, grabs the ball, and he throws it up, bam, hits the ceiling, and he walks out of the room. He goes, "And that's how you win." And that's how you win, guys. It's not that hard. There is an enemy out there that wants to steal, kill, and destroy. He's prowling around like a roaring lion. And if we're dumb and clueless and we don't pay attention, he's going to take advantage of us. But if we surrender to Jesus and we get our heads in the game and we actually fight, it's not hard. Jesus did the hard part. Jesus stomped the enemy's head, crushed the enemy's head. Jesus disarmed him. Jesus did all the hard work by dying and rising again. All we do is we receive what he did and we walk in that authority. So let me summarize. Number one, we're in a war. Number two, we can't get out of it. Number three, it's a spiritual war. Number four, our enemy is Satan and his demons. Five, Satan wants to destroy us. Six, we need to get serious about fighting. And seven, we can trust that Jesus already won the war, so victory is ours. So in the upcoming weeks, I think I told Jesse, I have 20 or 21 different messages kind of laid out. I have over 130 pages of notes. I've been reading nonstop, like different books about spiritual warfare, listening to Michael's old messages, looking at my old notes, and all this stuff. I've been compiling all this stuff, filling my mind with this because I don't know. I want to see if there's other stuff that I don't know, because there might be. And so I've got so many messages laid out. We'll see how many I go over, but I want to kind of go. This is like the basic broad look at stuff, and I want to in the next coming weeks look at okay. Where does the enemy come from and what does he actually do in our lives and how do we fight that? How do we get victory? What are his tactics and how do we overcome? And so that we can start actually walking in the victory that God called us to walk in. Amen? All right, Jesus, thank you that you defeated the enemy, that you crushed his head, that you disarmed him and triumphed over him, that he has no power, he has no authority. Thank you for rescuing us from his domain and setting us in your kingdom of light, Jesus. And Father, I pray for your grace to be on us, Lord, to walk in faith and to have eyes open to see where the enemy is moving, to see what he's doing, to see the lies and the manipulation that he does in our lives and in the lives of those around us. And that you would give us grace to fight with spiritual weapons, not to just get angry and frustrated and lash out or name call or whatever, God, or whine and complain, but Lord, that we would fight with spiritual weapons and walk in the authority that we have in you to see his power vanquished, to see his kingdom destroyed and completely deleted from the land, from our lives.